I'm Neo. Welcome into the Skeptic Arena. Today is April 27th, 2013. The website is theskepticarena.com. Today's topic, Is America a Christian Nation? By Phil Castillo of One Nation Under God Radio. His essay begins, Some claim we are a Christian nation, but what does that really mean? And is there any truth to it? Is it logical that a recent graduate of a liberal college would have a different notion of the term than a working-class parent who faithfully attends church every Sunday? Every person's thinking to such a claim is subject to their worldview and experiences. But is there an objective understanding of such a statement? The three points I hear the most why America is not a Christian nation are, 1. All of our founding fathers were not Christian. Some were deist. 2. Not everyone in America is a Christian. And 3. We have a secular government that can't support one religion over another. Are these persuasive assertions to deny America is a Christian nation? Let's examine each claim. Phil, you sneaky little ghost worshiper. You subtly change the three points to three assertions. Very slick. He begins with number one. The deist founders, actually two of the original signers of the Declaration of Independence, Thomas Jefferson and Benjamin Franklin, did not hold to Orthodox Christian beliefs, yet even they were unequivocally devoted to the principles of the Christian Bible, both the Old and New Testaments, to establish and govern a society. Phil, Jefferson was so committed, in fact, that he took a pair of scissors to your Bible, and by the time he was through, there wasn't a single indication left that Jesus was anything other than an ordinary man, and certainly not a god. Phil, if you need a good read one night, you should Google the Jefferson Bible. And then when it came time to create a constitution for the new nation, these two leaders were so committed to the principles in the Bible that they completely forgot to include them in the new document. In fact, they even slapped your God right on his invisible cheeks with a dueling handkerchief when they wrote the First Amendment. It directly contradicted God's first and foremost commandment. Thou shalt have no other gods before me. What did Jefferson and Franklin do in response to God's command? They gave everyone freedom of religion. That must have really pissed God off because he then punished the new nation, which had failed to mention him at all, and let everyone worship any god they wanted by making this new country the richest and most powerful country on earth. Maybe he is forgiving after all. Phil continues, Also, let's not forget the remaining signers of the Declaration were all confessing Christians who used Christian precepts to form our country. Phil, I will admit to one Christian precept that was included in the new country, slavery. He wrote, Their personal writings and speeches were clearly those of devoted Christians. Any fair-minded person would agree. Well, Phil, that's a good way to prevent dissent. Simply state that anyone who disagrees with you is not fair-minded. Now Phil goes to number two. Does 100% of a nation's population have to belong to the same faith for that nation to be defined by that faith? Absolutely not. Phil, so even though not all Americans are women, we can still define ourselves as a woman nation? Even though not all Americans are Caucasian, we can still define ourselves as a white nation? Get the picture, Phil? Your attempt at logic is so feeble that it doesn't even rise to the level of a fallacy. It's just stupid. He wrote, It is generally understood that India is a Hindu nation, that Vietnam is a Buddhist nation, and that the Middle East are Muslim nations because the majority in those countries practice the same faith. Phil, that kind of simplistic thinking is so typical of religious minds. As I just pointed out, America is not a white nation, just because the majority are Caucasian. The term Christian nation refers to the type of government under which you want the nation to operate. Iran is a Muslim nation, not because most of its citizens are Muslim, but because its government is completely defined by Islam. The United States, on the other hand, is famous for being the nation with the first secular constitution in history. Rather than being honest and just admitting you want to change our secular democracy into a Christian theocracy, you people always resort to dishonesty by trying to claim that it was supposed to be a theocracy from the beginning. That's why you people constantly distort facts and attempt to rewrite history. Phil wrote, "Likewise, every current national poll on religious demographics in America show the overwhelming majority faith practiced is still Christianity." Phil, keep an eye on those polls. Every time they take one, you people lose more ground. At the rate your religion is falling, pretty soon you'll be battling Scientology to stay in the top 10. He wrote, "To deny that is to deny reality." Phil, since when has that ever bothered you? You believe in invisible ghosts and men who could live inside a fish for 3 days. What could you possibly have to tell rational people about reality? And now Phil moves to number 3. What about the argument that since America has a secular government, we can't define our country by any religion? It's a false argument that we are completely secular government or political system. Or else, how can we explain our rights given to us by God in the Declaration of Independence? Phil, our laws are based on the Constitution, not the Declaration of Independence. Bad laws are declared unconstitutional, not undeclarational. The reason why you people are forced to refer to the Declaration is because God was completely omitted from our Constitution. And the fact that the Founding Fathers believed that our rights came from some God doesn't mean that our government is Christian, as you are trying to imply. He continues, "How can we explain 'In God we trust' on our currency?" Phil, you had the gall to talk about false arguments, and now you are trying to claim that the motto on our currency supports your contention that we were founded as a Christian nation? That motto wasn't added until centuries after the founding of our country. How could you make such an easily debunked claim? Are your readers that ignorant that you feel you can write down any crap you want, knowing that they are too stupid to check? Well, I guess you just answered that one, didn't you, Phil? He continues, "Or how can we explain having two national holidays honoring Christ?" Phil, those holidays came long after the founding of our country. Christians swiped Christmas from other religions and now claim it for their own, even though they don't even know the date Christ was born on, don't even know the year, which was supposedly 4 years before he was born, nor can they prove that he ever even existed. If you Google Christmas, you'll learn it wasn't celebrated in America until the century following the founding of our country. Easter celebrates the brutal execution of a rabbi. Most people enjoy the holiday as they do Christmas, but to believe that he rose from the dead explains why rational people refer to your holy book as a book of fairy tales. Phil continues, "It's true that the First Amendment guarantees that the government doesn't take its marching orders from any religious institution, but rather from we the people. But it is clear that our founders formed these truths from Christianity and not Buddhism, Islam, or Hinduism." And Phil, what truths would those be? He said, "To this day, the Christian Bible is still the most quoted book in American history by those who serve in our government." Phil, not a surprise, since politicians must thump the Bible for all they're worth if they want to get elected in a nation full of superstitious ghost worshippers. He wrote, "Many of us take issue with President Obama's statement that we are no longer a Christian nation." Phil, I do too, but not for the same reason you do. The reason I disagree with the statement is because we never were a Christian nation, as the Treaty of Tripoli so clearly stated. Phil wrote, if, as many believe, Obama is intent on his promise to fundamentally transform the United States of America, he cannot accomplish the task as long as the majority in our nation bows their knee to Jesus Christ. Phil, big screw up on that one. Obama attended church as often as you did, maybe more. He is a Christian. So when he talks about transforming our nation, he is referring to secular issues, not issues of faith. Phil said, Obama's attempt to remove the foundation is an attempt to dismantle the system to which America has always held. It is a fact that America's founding fathers used the Christian Bible as the construct of our political system. Phil, claiming it is a fact doesn't make it so. You need to provide evidence. You know, like the evidence I provided earlier that the founding fathers spit in your God's face when writing the First Amendment. Phil said that the majority faith practiced in America is still Christianity. Phil, it used to be close to 100%. Look at it now, about 75%. Since there isn't any evidence of a resurgence, it's probably just as well you won't be around to read the polls in the future. Believe me, Phil, things aren't going your way. Phil said, and that our government still reflects Christianity in our national holidays and slogans. Phil, as I stated earlier, our national holidays and slogans are not still reflecting our founding. They were added in later by Christian nationalists. And Phil concludes, we know there are forces that want to deny this truth and chart a new course, so it is imperative that we never stop fighting to keep America a Christian nation. Phil, an honest statement would have read, we never stop fighting to make America a Christian nation. Unfortunately, Phil, honesty is something that this essay has proven you do not possess. And now we move to the science segment. Today's story, the accepted model for brain signaling is flawed. A new study turns two decades of understanding about how brain cells communicate on its head. The study demonstrates that the tripartite synapse does not exist in the adult brain. This model was long accepted by the scientific community and was one in which multiple cells collaborate to move signals in the central nervous system. This study shows that the tripartite synaptic model is incorrect. This concept does not represent the process for transmitting signals between neurons in the brain beyond the developmental stage. The central nervous system is home to many different cells. While neurons tend to garner the most attention, it is only recently that the function of the brain's other cells have been fully appreciated. Glial cells, known as astrocytes, for example, had long been considered mainly the glue that helps hold all the other cells in the central nervous system in place. Scientists now understand that these cells are essential to maintaining a healthy environment in the brain by helping carry out functions such as removing waste. Neurons are like a racing car. While the driver gets all the credit, there are often 20 people behind the scenes that are optimizing its success. However, when it comes to moving signals between neurons in the brain, it turns out that the scientists may have vastly exaggerated the role of the astrocyte. Neurons are connected to each other via axons, or arms, that extend from the cell's main body. Communication between neighboring neurons takes place where axons meet other nerve cells, called a synaptic juncture. When an electrical charge causes chemicals, called neurotransmitters or glutamate, to be released by one cell and read by receptors on the surface of the opposite. The two cells do not actually touch, so the chemical messages must pass through a gap in the synaptic juncture. The space around this gap is insulated by astrocytes. Under the tripartite synapse model, both astrocytes and neurons were believed to play a role in the conversation between cells. This understanding was largely based on animal models which showed active receptors and neural transmission between not only the nerve cells but also the nearby astrocytes. While this model has held sway for decades, scientists have long been frustrated by their inability to influence this process by targeting it with drugs. If this concept was correct, it should have given rise to a clinical trial by now. It has not, which tells scientists that with so many labs working on this for 20 years, that there must be something wrong. One of the barriers to understanding precise mechanics of passing signals from one neuron to another has been the inability to observe this process in the adult brain. The tripartite synapse model was based in part by examining the activity in the brains of very young rodents. Adult rodents could not be similarly studied because the synapses in the brain would die before they could be fully analyzed. This ultimately led to the presumption that the signaling process that was witnessed in the young brain carried over to adulthood. Researchers developed a new two-photon microscope that enabled them to observe glia activity in the living brain. Using both this method and by analyzing the gene and protein expression in the brain, the researchers discovered that the specific neurotransmitter largely disappear in the glial cells of adult mice, meaning that these cells do not directly respond to synaptic neuronal signaling, thus calling into question the concepts that drive most of ongoing research in the field. The process of neuron glial transmission, as conceived by the tripartite synapse model, appears to just be a simplistic signaling pathway that teaches the synapse how to behave. Once the brain matures, it goes away. And now we move to the final segment of the show, Famous Quotes. Today, Andrew Carnegie, born 1835, died 1919, at the age of 83. Carnegie was a Scottish-American industrialist who led the enormous expansion of the American steel industry in the late 19th century. He was also one of the highest-profile philanthropists of his era. His 1889 article, Wealth, known more commonly as The Gospel of Wealth, remains a formative advisory text for those who aspire to lead philanthropic lives. Carnegie started as a telegrapher and by the 1860s had investments in railroads, railroad sleeping cars, bridges, and oil derricks. He built further wealth as a bond salesman, raising money for American enterprise in Europe. He built Pittsburgh's Carnegie Steel Company, which he sold to J.P. Morgan in 1901 for $480 million. Creating the U.S. Steel Corporation. Carnegie devoted the remainder of his life to large-scale philanthropy, with special emphasis on local libraries, world peace, education, and scientific research. With the fortune he made from business, he built Carnegie Hall and founded the Carnegie Corporation of New York, Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, Carnegie Institution for Science, Carnegie Trust for the Universities of Scotland, Carnegie Hero Fund, Carnegie Mellon University, and the Carnegie Museums of Pittsburgh, among others. His life has often been referred to as a true rags-to-riches story. And now for the quote from Andrew Carnegie. "I don't believe in God. My God is patriotism. Teach a man to be a good citizen, and you have solved the problem of life."
Are you ready, Bruce?